The following program is sponsored by Friends of Life Outreach International. Dr. Ben Carson describes childhood decisions that almost destroyed his dreams.
And I tried to stab him in the abdomen, and fortunately he had on a large metal belt buckle under his clothing. And a knife blade struck it with such force that it broke, and he fled in terror. But I was more horrified than he, and I locked myself in the bathroom, and I knew my options were jail, reform school, or the grave.
Clinging to hope in a desperate situation. Next.
Welcome to lunch today. I hear a warm response, but I actually feel like I'm looking at something way beyond a welcome. I feel like I'm looking at hope. I really do feel like I'm looking at hope. I'm James Robison. Betty and I are thrilled to have our guest that you'll meet in a few moments, Dr. Ben Carson. But I want to say something before you meet him and welcome him. I want to say, Sonia, I wish I could hug you. God bless you, Mom. God bless you, precious, precious mother, and all the Carson family. And to you, Audrey, wonderful assistant to Dr. Carson, can I just tell you how much you blessed me when you talked to me and said, oh, Brother James, thank you for not just giving handouts, but giving hand-ups. Thank you so much. Well, thank you, Audrey, for assisting this man and all the other, the Carol that also assists and so many others and all that staff. And Dr. Carson has always given total credit not only to God, but to all the incredible assistants who are not only gifted, but who are so focused and dedicated to giving life. Sounds a whole lot like someone else I know who came to give life and life more abundant. But I also want to say thanks to the one who assists Dr. Carson, standing at his side, his true helpmate, and who helped him with the great book, America the Beautiful, which you can get now, I understand, in paperback. And they've had a hard time keeping up. I'm just going to go ahead and say a prayer. Lord, I pray everybody in America that can read reads this book. I pray that with all my heart. I actually have to add, Lord, I'd like them to read it and read it with the Bible. Because I feel like, Father, that the Word of God that isn't merely carried by Dr. Carson, but the word that carries him, somehow, in order for the character, strength, and conviction to be realistic and solid and sustainable and stable and steadfast, what he says in this book must have the word of your truth and your strength and your spirit that we see so beautifully displayed in him. So bless this book. But you see, I want you to know, it says, with Candy Carson. You see, this beautiful wife has helped him. And we really know, don't we, Betty, who really carries the load. I stand on the shoulders of a woman 5'3" tall. And it makes a 6'3" guy sometimes look pretty tall. I want you to say thank you to Candy Carson. Candy, go ahead and stand. And we want to just tell you we love you. Aren't you glad that Dr. Carson's beautiful wife is here? You know, the moment I looked into your eyes and got near you, I said, that love, it's all over this doctor. I know where it's coming from. He's walking in an atmosphere of love. Would you do something right now? Would you stand with me and Betty and let's welcome Dr. Benjamin Carson to life today. So glad to see you, my brother. Bless you. You know, I don't know when I've been more blessed and inspired, and in some ways, because it wasn't a heavy conviction, it was an encouraging conviction. I said, Lord, the love that is controlling and the calmness of spirit, which is so obvious, the Holy Spirit, because you know you have those pressure moments when this calmness is much greater than you, and the wisdom. I just said, Lord, let that be on me.
Well, you know, I wasn't always calm. As a youngster, I had a horrible temper. And, you know, I was one of those people who thought they had a lot of rights. And the more rights you think you have, the more likely someone is to infringe upon them. And people were always infringing on my rights. And I remember once a fellow hit me with a pebble. It didn't hurt. But I was incensed that he would dare hit me. And I picked up a large rock, hurled it at his face, broke his glasses, almost put his eye out. Another fellow was trying to get me to wear, to close my locker. I didn't want it closed. I struck him in the forehead with my fist, still had the lock in my hand, put a 3-inch gash in his forehead. My mother was trying to get me to wear something. I didn't want to wear it. Picked up a hammer, went to hit her in the head with it. And fortunately, my brother caught it from behind. You know, other than that, I was a pretty good kid. But, you know, when I was 14, you know, another youngster angered me, and I had a large camping knife called Camper. And I tried to stab him in the abdomen. And fortunately, he had on a large metal belt buckle under his clothing. And the knife blade struck it with such force that it broke, and he fled in terror. But I was more horrified than he, and I locked myself in the bathroom, and I had turned things around academically by then. But I realized that with a temper like that, I would never realize my dream of becoming a physician. I knew my options were jail, reform school, or the grave. And none of those appealed to me. So I just said, Lord, you gotta help me. I cannot control my temper. And I picked up the Bible and opened it to the book of Proverbs. And there were all these verses in there about fools. And it looked like they all described me. And then there were verses also about anger. For instance, Proverbs 19:19, there's no point getting an angry man out of trouble because he's just going to get right back in it. But encouraging verses like Proverbs 16:32, mightier is the man who can control his temper than the man who can conquer a city. Wow. And, you know, it spoke to me in a powerful way. And I realized while I was in that bathroom that to punch somebody, to kick down a door was not a sign of strength. It was a sign of weakness. It meant that you were easily manipulated by the environment and by other people, and that you were, of all people, the weakest if you were the angriest. And I also came to understand that if you can step out of the middle of the circle and not have everything be about you, then you won't be angry all the time. You know, people who are always angry are people who are selfish because it's always about them. Somebody did something to them. Somebody took their thing. Somebody's in their space. And if you can step out of that, you have great control. And when I came out of that bathroom after 3 hours, the temper was gone. I've never had another problem with it since that time. And some people say, well, you just learn how to hide it. But I got to tell you, when the Lord fixes it, he doesn't just paint it over. He fixes it from the inside.
Boy, isn't that beautiful. You know, I was listening to you talk about that change in understanding your spirit. And you know, I came out of very difficult circumstances like you did. Both of us came out of poverty. We grew up without fathers. I went into ministry, and I was very bold. I was fearless, which I think we really need today. But I preached so much, and I traveled so much. I was physically exhausted. I became somewhat insensitive. But I was very angry about whatever I thought was wrong. The fact is, I was also angry about my own tormentors, perhaps that had been carried up even from my childhood, that I really hadn't been able to know how to thoroughly deal with. Mm. And I was kind of known as God's angry voice crying in the wilderness. And really, when I look back at the way, I know the things I said were true, but I really question how much love was behind it and animosity. And God really broke me. And by the way, he still needs to do a lot more shaping with me. And I'm seeking to always be soft clay.
And me too.
But you know what he convicted me with about that anger? It was a verse in James. It says, the wrath of man worketh not the righteousness of God. Mm. And I found out all our anger is not going to correct the course. There's room for it. There's definitely righteous indignation. There is plenty to be angry about. We used to have a businessman here that had bumper stickers that said, I'm mad too, Eddie. And his name was Eddie Childs. And everybody in the country had things to be mad about. But I really believe it's love that never fails. Mm. And I think that with the animosity, the hostility, the dissension in our country, and it's really almost at a violent stage.
Yes,
it's almost dangerous. Matter of fact, it is dangerous.
It is.
The people who believe in their particular cause, they want tolerance, but they're intolerant of anybody that doesn't agree with them.
Completely.
They just talk tolerance,
yes.
And they really can tend to want to silence those voices one way or another, and it's quite frightening. The only thing that can diminish that animosity is that love that you recognize, thank God I have, and that America needs to recognize, because it is love that will actually change things.
Absolutely.
I want to ask you about just your whole journey. Your mother didn't read very little. Your father left you when you were 8. My father left me after he had impregnated a practical nurse at age 40, hospice nurse. Mm. And when she couldn't get an abortion at 41, she gave birth to me, and he never showed up. Mm. So I grew up fatherless. He did show up, however, when I was a teenager, and he came in his drunken alcoholic state, tried to kill my mother, thought he had, because when she passed out, he thought, so it threatened to kill me, only one issue. He didn't know it, I had a gun. Mm. So he didn't kill me. I held it on him until the authorities came and arrested him. Kind of interesting in some of the dialogue that our founders seemed to understand that wicked people, evil people, always have guns. Government, law enforcement will always have guns,
right,
whether the government's under God or disdains God,
yes,
or does away with God, they'll have it. So they understood something. And you know that it wasn't even until this morning that I recognized I wouldn't have been here if I hadn't had a gun. He was going to kill me. He thought he'd kill my mother.
Yeah.
Here's the beautiful thing. When I told him if he moved a finger, I was going to shoot him, and he never moved. He just cursed me until the police came. Why didn't he move? Can I tell you why? Because a group of people that knew me when I was a little boy in a church never stopped praying for that little boy.
Mm-hmm.
I believe God, through prayer, for the sake of a little boy, held that man still. I believe prayer is that powerful.
Absolutely.
Your mother,
absolutely,
in your difficult state, never taught you to resent possibilities, did she?
No. My mother, if anybody should have felt like a victim, she was the one. You know, one of 24 children, getting married at age 13, trying to escape desperate poverty in rural Tennessee, moving to Detroit with my father, subsequently discovering that he was a bigamist, had another family, she only having a third grade education, and thrust upon her the responsibility of raising two sons in inner city Detroit. And yet, she would not allow herself to be a victim. She would work as hard as she needed to work. She did not want to be on welfare because she was observant, and she noticed that no one she ever saw go on welfare came off of it, and they didn't lead the kind of life that she wanted. She cleaned people's homes. She didn't resent that they had very nice homes, but she was observant. She said, why do they have very nice homes? Because they read, because they study, because they plan, they strategize. So one day she comes home, she turns off the TV and says, you guys are gonna read books. Now, we weren't very happy about that, as you might imagine. In today's culture, we probably would have called the authorities on it. But you know, back in those days, you had to do what your parents told you to do. But interestingly enough, after a while, I actually began to enjoy reading those books. It was an escape for me, because I could be anybody, I could do anything. I began to know things that nobody else knew. It was very, very empowering. I used to hate poverty before I started reading. But as I read more and more, particularly about successful people, I didn't hate poverty anymore, because I realized that I could change that. You know, if you can change something, it doesn't bother you nearly as
That's
much
exactly
as if you
right.
think you're stuck. And unfortunately, we have a lot of people in our nation today who think they're stuck. They're not stuck. There are opportunities, but they're not seeing them. And we have a system that says, there, you poor little thing, you can't do better, we'll take care of you. And it keeps them in that mindset. That is not a good place to be, I can tell you from experience.
You know, it's so interesting that we're sitting here, both of us are in our 60s. We both came from impossible circumstances. I didn't even have an address. I lived on back alleys and dumps. When I was in the second grade, my mother did the same thing. She insisted I read. Mm-hmm. I had a teacher that was wise, and she gave us a contest, and I'm competitive. We had bookworms for every book read. My bookworm went all the way around the entire classroom. I mean, I was worms ahead of the other kids. And you know what? What I read were the biographies, children's biographies of all the great Americans and all the great people in history, many of them in the European history. Right. And it really changed my thinking. The other thing my mother did while we were poor, she never taught me to resent the people out there that had succeeded. We never had a car.
Right.
I never resented people had a car. I never wanted to smash somebody's car because they're a nice car. Exactly. You know what I looked at and saw? Possibilities. Potential.
That's exactly
now, here's,
what I
here,
felt.
Two of us here. I'm white. If you haven't noticed, he's black. Now, the beautiful thing is we're family. Yeah. You're as much my brother as anyone. You're as much my family as anybody in my family.
Exactly.
And I mean that.
Exactly.
And we come from the same background. And we have a story that all the people who feel like somebody needs to take care of them rather than Father God.
Exactly.
They're complaining because they didn't have a father. They're angry that everybody has something. They think if you succeed or have something, you're public enemy number one.
Right.
Rather than saying opportunity number one, the sky is not the limit. God's the limit. You and I saw that. Thank God, no father, good mother, pointed us with some very sound principles upon which we could build, and we built. Now, here's the thing. Great percentage of our population have bought in the inverted worldview. God at the bottom, if at all.
Right.
Not understanding principle. You and I did, and it is an incredible story, incredible journey.
Yes.
But in our hearts, and this is the thing I know about a lot of people who succeeded. They've been making the mistake of giving a tremendous amount of their money to Pharaoh to take care of all the people. And Pharaoh's never done a good job taking care of people.
Exactly.
He always takes them into bondage, whatever form he's in. You and I saw the possibility that we didn't have to depend on. We had a father.
Right.
And we needed regulations and laws because God is a God of law and order and justice and enforcement. And so our founders understood that. You and I understand that. Two diverse backgrounds. And in my heart is the cry beyond preaching, I want people to hear.
Yes.
And we're talking about winning elections too often when we need to be winning hearts and minds.
Right.
Something happened to your heart and my mind, and you and I, and you correct me if I'm wrong, we believe that it can happen in the heart and mind of everybody in America, no matter what level they are, no matter what race they are.
Absolutely.
And we don't believe there's a Pharaoh big enough to keep them down. Do you agree with that?
I totally agree with that. And, you know, a couple of points. First of all, I was doing an interview on NPR, and the correspondent said, Dr. Carson, I notice you don't talk about race very often. Why is that? And I said, it's because I'm a neurosurgeon. And she looked at me quite quizzically. What the heck does that have to do with it? And I said, you see, when I take someone to the operating room and I cut that scalp and I peel the skin back and I take off that bone flap and I open the dura, I'm operating on the thing that makes that person who they are. The cover doesn't make them who they are. It's the brain that makes them who they are. And when you're able to think deeply, you can see past superficial things and you begin to understand what's truly important. And that's why you and I are in harmony. The cover doesn't mean anything. It's what's inside that makes all the difference in the world.
Yes, yes, yes. Absolutely. How true. Oh, I pray. You know, a lot of times America thinks, and we really ought to be actively involved in helping choose wise, capable leaders. But it's not a matter of just winning an election forever. It's winning hearts and minds. And that really is critical. And God changed our lives. Difficult circumstances, but they didn't keep us trapped. That's the beauty of America's freedom and opportunity. Dr. Carson's book, I did mention, is now available in paperback, America the Beautiful. It's so similar to Indivisible. I think it's written a little bit simpler to grasp, more of a story form, but the same basic truths. And if you'd like to have it, I'd be glad to send it to you to just say thank you. But here's what we want you to do. We want you to look into a situation where changed hearts and minds are necessary to literally save lives. This is not major surgery. This is not hoping this will work like some of the surgeries that Dr. Carson did. This is something that is absolutely certain to work. Watch very closely.
While you don't always expect a hospital to be a happy place, you do have expectations for what might send you there. A broken bone, severe illness, failing organs. What's shocking to find is bed after bed with children fighting for their lives and often losing that fight, all because of a lack of food. Ironically, they don't arrive saying they're hungry. Hunger for these children is life. It's all they've ever known. They're brought here because their bodies are shutting down. Failing organs should send you to the hospital. In the case of malnourished children, their skin, which is actually an organ, is one of the first to go. It literally begins to fall off.
Aqui no centro, a mortalidade está elevada nesses últimos dias. Por quê? Porque os nossos doentes já vêm no estado crítico. Já vêm no estado crítico. E nós tentamos assim, superar, daí da acolá. Às vezes não dá mesmo certo. Por ali.
Eu tenho medo que ele morra, porque eu não ficaria bem. Ele é meu primeiro filho, lhe peguei. Então, é por isso que eu não quero mesmo que ele me perde.
These moms are doing all they can, and our team is too. But unless you join us, it may not be enough.
I can tell you quite pointedly, it won't be enough. It doesn't matter how great the burden on the part of the missionaries. And by the way, those attendants and those nurses are there. They themselves are missionaries. Many of these are clinics that are basically in the bush, or on the edge of the extreme areas of isolation and poverty. And they're there with love. And the missionaries and those doctors, I promise you, they care. But we give them the resources. The sugar and oil that goes into the intravenous feeding and that they give those children when they can't really absorb food well, all of the various medications to try to turn it around for them, that's provided by love. But the thing I want you to understand is those children right there, if we don't have a miracle now, they won't even make it the next 24 to 48 hours. We're getting most of these children, some 400,000 of them right now, that the missionaries have located who are in desperate need. Most of them have not reached that state because we're trying to turn it around before they get there. But the fact is, we are unable to accomplish the goal, the very worthy, meaningful, precious, and special goal, not only to those mothers and those missionaries, but to God. He loves those children. And we are His hands. We express the heart of God the Father. Would you dial that number, please, right now? Would you say, I'll tell you what, James, I'm going to help save three children, or I'm able to help save five or 10. $30, $50, or $100 enables us to care for 3, 5, or 10 children for the next months. Would you dial the number right now? Take your mic, or go get it, please, go get it. Go to the phone. And you call. If you ever get a busy, you say, I'm getting through. This is a lifeline. Thank God someone else is calling. But a lot of people will be calling. Are calling for personal need and prayer themselves. But you say, I'm going to get through. Of course, if you have a heartbreak, you need prayer, always call. But those of you who will help, you be determined, I'm going to get through. And here's my gift of $100 to help take care of 10 children, or $50 to care for 5, $30 to care for 3. There are some of you who could give $1,000, and I pray you will. I think you'll be excited to do it if you're able. Help us care for 100 children. Would you please make that call? If you write a check, make it to Life, but let us know you're sending it. You can go online, lifetoday.org, and many of our friends are giving that way. It's immediately here. We thank you for that. We can tell the missionaries how we're coming along. But we've got to care for 400,000 children. It starts one child, 3 children, 5, 10 at a time. We have some beautiful gifts for you. We always send you something to bless you because you bless others. A good word for a great day. 365 devotions that will help you start your day. The Family Reading Bible, great to share with your children or grandchildren. And then the commemorative bronze for 50 years of ministry. thank you for helping make it possible. But thank you today for not turning away, but reaching out and helping.
At this very moment, a child is drawing his last breath, struggling to stay alive due to a lack of food. Sadly, this impoverished child is not alone, and without our help, many, like him, face death as well. Today, you can make a difference. You can help save a life. Life's mission feeding teams are in place right now, ready to answer the hunger cries of 400,000 suffering children in remote areas of Africa. With previous food reserves gone and parts of Africa facing its worst drought and food shortage in years, we desperately need to replenish our supplies immediately. Your life-saving gift of $30, $50, or $100 will help feed and care for 3, 5, or 10 children for 3 full months. With your gift, we would like to send you a good word for a great day. A 365-day devotional providing an inspirational new word, Bible verse, and promise for each new day. With your gift of $100 or more to help feed 10 children, you may request the Family Reading Bible, featuring easy-to-use reading tracks, questions, and fun facts to help engage your children in God's Word. Finally, please consider a gift of $1,000 or more to help feed and save the lives of 100 children. And you may also request the 50th anniversary commemorative bronze, Brotherly Love. Please call, write, or make your gift online today.
I'm so glad you watched the program today. I know you've enjoyed Dr. Carson. Thank God for him. I want to just suggest that if you can help us literally reach out and touch the lives of 100 children in need, you ask for the commemorative bronze, Brotherly Love. The children, when they get strong enough, they immediately start helping their brothers. Also, remember this, if you would like to have Dr. Carson's book, America the Beautiful, it is now available in paperback. You can go to the bookstores or go online and get it. Or if you help us reach out to these precious children and their families, we'll gladly send you this book if you ask for it and you'd like to have it, to say thank you for your help saving lives and giving life. God bless you. Thanks for watching Life Today.
James and Betty Robison, July 18th through the 20th for the Awaken Now Conference at Gateway Church in South Lake, Texas, featuring inspiring speakers such as author and neurosurgeon Dr. Ben Carson, international Bible teacher and author Beth Moore, Pastor Robert Morris, author and speaker Christine King, and many more, including musical guests such as Phillips, Craig, and Dean. Register today for this once-in-a-lifetime event celebrating 50 years of ministry with James and Betty Robison. Go to lifetoday.org. Next week on Life Today, conference leaders and authors Sarah May and Sally Clarkson encourage moms not to face the challenges of motherhood alone. Life Today is made possible by the supporters of Life Outreach International. Your gift will be used exclusively for the exempt purposes of Life. The ministry features specific outreaches as examples of the programs it supports and conducts. Gifts are considered to be without restriction as to use unless explicitly stipulated by the donor. The ministry is a member of the ECFA.